Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday night. This is Coach Joe Ledford. I'm joined by Coach Ricky Clark on WDCU Daniel Clark. Let's Talk Radio. That's being brought to you on Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio. Tonight's show, as always, is brought to you by the good folks over at Players Sporting Goods. Players Sporting Goods at 5737 North Graham Street in Charlotte, 704-598-7966. You can call and ask to speak to David, Colt, Denise, Cody, or Boo. You don't have to do that, though. You can go online to www.playersls.com, where Ashley will take care of all of your online needs. The folks at Players Sporting Goods have been mighty good to Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools and James Martin in particular, and we appreciate their being part of this show. And for those of you who want to call in tonight, that Players Sporting Goods call-in guest line number is 888-689-4061. Now, young people, if you're listening tonight, and we hope you are, and you do want to call in, we're going to have some guests. We want you to know, call in from a landline and use that number, that 888-689-4061 number. Let us pay for your call, because if you call in using your cell phone, even if you use that 888 number, 689-4061, that counts against the minutes on your plan. Coach Clark, I know you've had a long day at school. You ready for a big show tonight?
Absolutely.
And we have a special guest with us tonight. Brian Mack is joining us. Brian was an all-world athlete here in Mecklenburg County more years ago than any of us care to remember, but I'm a lot older than Brian is, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about his views on youth sports. He's also going to be a special guest with us 2 weeks from tonight. That'll be April 10th, when we have currently at least one judge who's agreed to come on the show, and we're hoping to get another, a federal judge, to come on the show, because we want to talk about the choices that young people have to make, not just athletes, but young people in general, because there are consequences to the decisions that we make in life. And young people, we just got to understand, and we can't emphasize enough, that everybody you're going to hear talking to you on this show cares about young people, cares about you. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. But the older you get, the more you find that there are consequences for the decisions that you make, consequences for your actions, and sometimes those can be very negative. So we're hoping that all of CMS will be listening 2 weeks from tonight, April 10th. Excuse me. Ryan, welcome to the show. We appreciate you being with us tonight and want you to be a regular on this show.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Anytime.
Well, you know, let's you know, Coach Clark, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you and I are involved in middle school sports, and I think, Brian, you have a son playing at that middle school age level, and in Mecklenburg County, primarily we have 6th through 8th graders. Some folks in our listening area will be junior high, which is 7 through 9, and for the most part, that's going to be ages 12 through 15, and those are very important ages in these kids' lives. They call those the development years, and that's where I think that you'll find that that's where a lot of people, you know, figure out where they're going to be for the rest of their lives. And in my mind, as much time as I spend around the school guys, I'm not completely convinced that we're doing a good enough job as parents and as educators as making kids aware enough of some of the consequences of the choices that they make, and how those consequences can really come back and be a problem for you down the road. And, Brian, I know you, in a couple of weeks you're going to be talking about your personal experiences, and I will tell you it takes a real man to do that. I respect your willingness to come out and be a mentor to young people. And, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, Brian, and, you know, and why you spend as much time dealing with young people as you do.
Well, born and raised here in Charlotte, North Carolina. As you spoke of, I was a standout high school basketball player at Garinger in 1989, but I got mixed up in a youth gang here in Charlotte, and actually that changed the course of my life.
So, how so?
Here, some 20 years later, I see a lot of myself in my son. This middle school age, where a lot of things in my life due to home situations, school situations, kind of started to shape and mold me. So I see a lot of these guys out here, and I'm a very simple guy, and I just try to use whatever I can as a motivating piece to just help kids not have to take the road that I took. You know, that not have to go through the some of the experiences that I've lived. So I try to use my business, which is called the Southeastern Cup Tournament Series, and motivate kids and put them in situations where they can use basketball as a tool to get them further in life.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, using basketball as a tool. The reason I enjoy coaching, at a middle school level is, let me say this, I thoroughly enjoyed my time in high school. I don't miss a 20 to 22-week season. I don't miss Friday night. I don't miss Sunday film. I don't miss grading film. I don't miss all those. The amount of time that high school coaches have to put in. But more important than that, I think that we need more strong male role models being around the 12 to 15-year-old age level of kid. And every time that they start getting sideways, they need somebody strong like you, Brian, and like you, Coach Clark. And, Brian, if you ever spend any time at James Martin Middle School, what you'll see about Coach Clark is he is probably the strongest male role model that has ever been on that campus. And the kids will tell you, Coach Clark don't play. And one of the reasons why I agreed to do this show, one of the reasons why the show that we have coming up in 2 weeks is so important to me, I was with my family over Christmas at Disney World, and we were watching, you know, Disney does everything right, especially at Christmas, and we were watching a fireworks show, and I got a call from Coach Clark. This was about 10 o'clock. It was in the evening, between 9 and 10, and I knew that for Ricky to be calling me, knowing I was in Florida, that something, it was important for him to call me. And the news he gave me just really hurt, because a young man that we had coached at Martin and had some issues with had been accused of murder, robbery and murder. And this young man, and I'm not going to call his name, I don't think that'd be fair to him, because he is presumed innocent. I am a lawyer. He's innocent until proven guilty. But in, all of a sudden, at the tender age, what is he, Coach? 17 years old, facing a first-degree murder charge, facing that life sentence. And I just, it just hurt me that a young man who we had our hands on, and, you know, he made the wrong choices. And I will tell you, when you get in court, they don't play. They absolutely don't play. All the alphabets, all the excuses, those things just don't matter. It's real simple. There's grid sentencing in state and federal court. And so one of the things that we want to do on this show, and we don't want to be the same sports talk show that everybody else listens to, we want to be a show that reaches out to people and tries to approach sports from a little different angle. And Brian, I respect what you're doing. Tell us a little bit more about your program and the type of young man that you're looking for in your program.
Well, the name of our program is called the Southeastern Cup Tournament Series. It's a tournament series of five high-level basketball tournaments throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia. What I try to do, being a former high-level athlete, is I target certain teams in certain areas that have kids that have chosen basketball as their sport, as the vehicle that they're going to try to use to accomplish education as their tool to go through. So we put together some of these high-level tournaments, and now there's a difference in what us as coaches would call high-level players, and then there's a difference in what parents would call high-level players.
Coach Clark, you never see any of that, do you?
I know, Brian, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
There's a major, major difference in it, you know, and what I've tried to do in this is develop a system where each one of these coaches can come to a tournament and know throughout the next, if you've got five tournaments on your schedule, I can schedule these five tournaments and know that when I travel, it's going to be a well-run tournament. It's going to be quality competition. It's going to be well-run. It's worth me putting my kids and my parents on the road to travel. Our last tournament was just last weekend in Nashville, Tennessee. That's a 9-hour drive. So you're talking about traveling that far, where we had teams that came from as far away as the Washington, D.C. area. So we do several of those, and what we try to do is use it as a mentoring session for all of our kids, to expose these kids who may be high-level athletes, but also take them to various places and let them be able to see different stuff.
Coach, I'd like to ask both of you a question. Coach Clark, I'd like to direct it to you first, because you have been coaching now for about 29 years. And, you know, something Coach talked about a moment ago when he said that there's a difference between what the coach sees and what the parent sees. And you've experienced that. Tell us a little bit about how do you deal with that? I mean, you got the parent who thinks that their child is great. And I know that you have one particular instance when you were over in Belmont that I'd like you to share with us, where you had a father who was just adamantly convinced that his son was the best ball carrier on the team, and you knew he wasn't. How did you deal with that?
Well, you know, at some point, the parent had approached me about playing time for his kid, and at the time, I was just a coach. I wasn't an athletic director, so I tried to explain to him that, you know, I would rather explain to you why your kid is not playing than to have to explain to the parent of the starting running back that could play anywhere in the county while he's sitting on the sideline and your kid is playing. And he didn't take that too well. And, you know, I went on to say that, you know, we're out here to teach the kid the fundamentals of football. At the same time, we want to win football games. And if your kid was better than the kid that's out there, your kid would be out there. And sometimes those are tough words for a parent to hear. That this kid that's playing is a better athlete than your kid. And, well, that wasn't received too well. So he went to my boss and, pretty much got the same message from the athletic director. And he went to the athletic director of Gaston County and pretty much got the same information. And he ended up calling Raleigh. And so I get a call from Gaston County athletic director and said, I'm going to need you to do something for me. He said, I need you to fix this. He said, I don't know how you can fix it, but be creative. So I thought about it, and I thought about it. And the next game, we go up a couple of touchdowns. You know, we just a running team. So, you know, we were running the ball and running it well. So we go up a couple of touchdowns. And, you know, the parents back there with a stopwatch. If you can believe that, with a stopwatch to see how long his kids stay in the game. So I put the kid in, call this number, the hole open, the hole closed.
And he wasn't there.
He wasn't there. But there was a linebacker that came through that hole when it opened, knocked the kid about 5 feet back. Okay, so now it's first and 15. We come back, and I call the kid's number again, a different play, hole open. Hole closed. DN come through that hole this time. Another lick. Third, right now we're third and, God, probably third and 22, 23, something like that. And I call the little swing pass. Drop back. Fake the long ball. Dumped it off to him. Corner came up and knocked his helmet off. About that time, the father is basically down on the sideline saying, I get it. I get it, coach. I get it. I said, okay. And I felt bad for the kid because I kept the kid on the team, A, because he was a freshman, and B, because he gave it all he had. Even though all he had wasn't enough, he gave it all he had, and I wanted the kids to see what hustle was, you know. work 100% everything he do. He just didn't have the physical skills to get it done. And so,
Coach
so that's kind of how I handled that, and it went away on its own.
Coach Mack, let me ask you this.
Most kids know, they know that they've got a certain skill set.
How do you deal? You have a lot of kids playing for you. Do you ever encounter that parent who is putting so much pressure on that kid to be a better ball player than he really is? And when that happens, how do you deal with that parent? Because sports is supposed to be a positive thing for kids, but it can be downright destructive. If that child feels like he or she is failing in mom or dad's eyes, that can be devastating to their development as just, you know, I mean, like making an F. So, Coach, how do you deal with that parent? I'm sure you've encountered that kid that you know is struggling. He knows he's not good enough, and yet he's just getting eat alive at home. How do you deal with that, Mac?
Well, for me, dealing with that situation is each parent has to assess each kid's level. And when, like I said earlier, when we deal with high-level kids and we deal with kids that have already decided this is their sport, then you have to put them in a situation where they can go head-to-head with this spotlighted kid, because parents are going to believe the best out of their kid. I just went through this particularly last weekend with my son. We went to Indianapolis. I have a son that's 12 years old, 6'3", 210 pounds. So people would look at his size level and think for the seventh grade, he's one of the premier players around. He's not. This became truly evident to me and him. There are kids out here that we've got recasting issues. We've got kids where you've got kids that may have been reclassed one or two times. And it may be academic reasons, it may be sports related, but a lot of these kids are doing it for their particular sport. So now you take a 12-year-old and have to compare him to a 14-year-old. There are some things that mentally and physically he should not be able to do. So you have to look at it and compare apples to apples. And for me, it has always worked to where if there's a parent that feels like his child is doing better than player before him, I'll put him in a head-to-head basketball situation. We'll go close gym, only me, the parent, and the two particular kids. And I was like, well, where do you feel like you could take minutes from this guy from? Something a fellow coach of mine told me was he's a real numbers guy. He breaks down all the numbers. He'll give you every stat. Where in the stat sheet is he? Can he beat this guy? And if so, we'll set it up for a individual type situation, because a lot of times you have to prove it to parents that this particular kid may be better than your kid in certain aspects.
And, you know, it's important, and I think each of us as coaches have had to deal with that situation, and it's important for us as coaches, and if you're coaching young men, you know, I care very much about every kid who's ever played for me. Coach Clark will tell you that sometimes on the field they might not feel that I do. But I want to push them to be the best that they can be. But at the end of the day, these are living, breathing people, okay? Now, I'm not one of these guys that believes that, you know, everybody plays, everybody gets a trophy. I frankly feel like that mentality in sports has kind of trivialized our game. I think that accolades should be reserved for the people who achieve, the people who go above and beyond. And I think that there are different levels of ball. And, you know, there are a lot of places where they don't keep score. There are a lot of places where playing time is 50%, that kind of thing. It doesn't matter. And yet, in order for our games to be what they're supposed to be, we really do need to make sure that we maintain what I call the competitive edge, so that we can teach young men and young women to realize the potential that they have, to exercise the gifts, use the gifts that God has given to them. And, you know, And I'll say this more from a high school perspective than at a middle school perspective, because, guys, I saw a lot of kids when I was at Independence where they knew that they were nearing the end of their playing time. They knew that there wasn't going to be a college scholarship. They knew they didn't have that speed. They knew they didn't have that quickness, that strength, whatever, to play at the next level. And I found that dealing with the kids was on that particular subject was easier than dealing with the parents. I'm gonna shift a little bit on both of you, if you will. And you know, and Coach Clark, you remember a kid who I had playing in our Mallet Creek Tar Heel program, which is very similar to what Coach Mack is doing. Cody Booth, best feet, best hands, one of the most gifted infielders, middle infielders I've ever coached. Now, when Cody would make an error, my coaching staff would say to him, "Cody, shake it off. Shake it off, Cody." We'd put the substitute in, the backup shortstop, and he would make an error, and I'd hear the rumbling, you know, "Well, he's killing us. He's killing us. Get him out of there. Get him out of there." And I think as coaches, we have to guard against that double standard. If the starter makes an error, how is that any different than the backup kid making an error? And, you know, I coached with a guy, too, who was constantly on the sideline telling a 9-year-old player, "I need strikes, I need strikes." And I finally looked at him and I said, "Coach, I promise you, he knows you need strikes. He needs that strike worse than you do because he's the guy out there trying to give you that strike. Let's make it easier for him to throw. And let's not treat it like it's the end of the world if he doesn't." Jump in and comment on that, fellas. But before you do, I want to remind folks who might be listening, when we have guests on, we don't want you to wait till we get through the segment with the guest. We want you to feel free to call in and ask your questions. Jump in on that Player Sporting Good call-in line, guest call-in line, that number 888-689-4061. Guys, as we a subject that I have, you know, that has become important to me because I'm the commissioner of Nations Baseball, which is a national tournament association. And we're probably the fifth largest in the country right now. And a lot of things are landed on my desk that I have to make a determination about as commissioner. And it's involving violence at youth sporting events. And, you know, Coach Clark, we've seen it at Martin. Coach Mack, I'm sure you've seen it. What is going on with people and their conduct at athletic events? And we have a caller who's going to jump in here with us. Caller, welcome to the Coach Clark, Coach Ledford call-in show. You're calling in on the Player Sporting and Guest line. Who do we have online with us?
Hey, it's Coach Walker at Ridge Road.
Alex Walker, the coach over at Ridge Road, one of the big rivals of Martin Middle School, one of the best middle school coaches I know, coach a little high school football coach. You're online with Coach Ricky Clark, myself, Coach Brian Mack, who runs a youth program, one of the best in the community. Alex is joining us. First-time caller for him. Alex, I want you to know that you're welcome on this show at any time. I hope you've been listening and hope you want to make you part of this conversation.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be on here with you guys. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Well, we were about to talk about some of the bizarre things that we have seen, the conduct of parents and fans at sporting events. And, you know, Coach Walker, if you would jump in, share an experience with us and tell us how you see it.
Well, I was listening a little bit before I came on, and I started thinking about that and trying to rack my brain and think about it. And the first thing that popped into my mind was I know over at Ridge we had had some issues with overzealous parents, and we ended up just shutting our practices down to all of our sporting events just, you know, due to the fact that we had some parents that didn't they just seemed to have too much time on their hand and wanted to come to the practices and were too involved a little bit verbally with their child. So it ended up working out pretty good for us. But we've had some games over the years that Coach Clark and I, we coached against each other since 99, and I know Ricky can attest to that. We've had some spirited fans sitting behind us that got a little riled up at their child's sporting event. And it kind of goes back to, you know, the parents are always supposed to set the example for their kid, but they end up going a little bit overboard And, you know, it's funny, too, because you look at the kid and it's almost like the child, they're embarrassed that the parents know what they're doing or saying what they're saying.
Coach Mack, have you, you took teams to Tennessee, to Indianapolis, Florida, Georgia. Have you seen situations where you just want to take a look at the people that are acting out and shake your head and say, just what are you thinking?
That one's kind of a touchy slope for me because, as I said, I've been one of those overzealous parents. My son, basketball, I have a passion for basketball, a unbridled passion, and I tell my son all the time, I don't want to live basketball through you. My glory days are done. What I want to get my son, and a lot of the reasons why I verbalized it a lot more to him, is because basketball to me is more than just a game. If you're good to the game of basketball, basketball will be very, very good to you. And there are a lot of intangibles that you can do in a sport, like giving it your all. I tell him all the time, there are going to be times when you have bad games that you don't score. But just because you're not scoring does not mean you can't play defense. There are other things you can do. You just can't give up. And to just give up, to me, that's something that infuriates me. And I've overemphasized that to him. And today I'm working with trying to be better with that. But there are limits to anything. I've seen parents where I don't necessarily have a problem, and I've been on the parent side and the coaching side, if you have comments that are directed to your child. Now, when those comments start to overlap to where you're talking about other people's kids, like he sucks, he's no good, things like that, that's where I feel like you've crossed the line.
Absolutely.
You know, when you have a parent that may just be telling his son, one of my favorite things, and my son hear me say that, he's going to bust out laughing. I always yell at him, run, run. Your effort levels are things that you can control. Things of that nature, I don't have a problem with. But when you get to berating players and telling them, you know, they suck, they're horrible, things like that, where you're more than, you're now going into demeaning his personal character, then that's where I feel like the line needs to be crossed.
You know, and you're right about that. You're absolutely right. And one of the things that, and I'm going to ask Coach Clark to comment on this, because we see more baseball than anything out at James Martin Middle School. And, Coach, there have been times that we've seen the kids have a little bit of a bump up. They move on, but the next thing we know, the moms are yelling at each other, and then away we go, and you have to get involved. Tell us about that, Tom.
Exactly. And I've said to parents, you know, 5 minutes from now, those kids, those 13 and 14-year-olds will be playing baseball again and will have forgotten all about it. And you will still be sitting over here steaming. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. One thing I like about middle school sports in general, when I get a parent that's yelling and yelling and yelling, I just give him that look. And if I have to look over there again, because know this, you don't pay to get in middle school sports and CMS. So we reserve the right to ask you to leave. And you constantly have to remind the parents that this is not about you. This is about your student athlete. Whether you felt like it was a bad call or not, it's irrelevant to us. It's irrelevant to the game because you're on the other side of the fence. If you're not going to say something to lift this team up or to lift these players up, then don't say anything. But we're not going to stand there. We're not going to stand there for four quarters and listen to you run your mouth. Because I will call the police officer, take him to his car. He's had all he can take.
Well, Coach Walker, you have a unique situation at Ridge Road in that you're always having to play in the shadow of James Martin football. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, but the truth of the matter is Coach Clark is the dean of coaches in Mecklenburg County. And You know, and yet every, as you said, every time we play you guys, it is that it's a game that is almost always decided on the last possession. And you do such a great job of getting your kids up for James Martin. When you've got your teams and you know that you're going to play a really good team this week, what do you say to them?
Well, I always refer back to Ricky because you're right. He is it's like Carolina and Duke when we play. He's like the Dean Smith of football, and I've learned a lot from watching him over the years. But our kids know when they see James Martin on our schedule, it's almost like I don't have to say anything because on Monday, it's a different type of energy to practice. They know that they better be on their A game because if they're not, they're going to be exposed. And they know that they're going to be playing some of the best athletes in Mecklenburg County in middle school sports. And they've got to bring their A game or they're not going to be able to stay on the field with them. So one thing that I always try to tell them to do is bring everything that you got. I don't care what kind of an athlete you are. You may play a school like Martin that has better athletes. They may be a little quicker, a little stronger. But if you get yourself mentally prepared for that, that you can make up for a little bit of that with some heart and determination. And like I say, Coach Clark and I, we've had some knockdown dragouts over the years. And Ricky always puts a quality program out. And everybody in our league always tries to, if you can play with Martin, you've done something with your season. If you beat him, that's icing on the cake. But if you can just play with him and be competitive, then you played with, some of the best athletes in the county, in the state for that matter, and you coached against one of the best ones too.
And for those of you who are just joining us right now, one of our special guests tonight is Coach Brian Mack, who at one time was probably the premier basketball player in North Carolina, and certainly in this area. Coach,
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you were mighty good, and you let.
About that.
Well, yeah, modesty is a fine thing, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did he play in a state championship game?
Yeah, with
how'd
Gary
that turn out?
In 1989.
And how'd that game turn out for you?
Well, we won. We played against, old Carolina fans, Hendrick Rodel, and Hendrick Rodel played for Carolina. And,
National championship team, 1993. Remember him well.
And Rodney Rogers that played at Wake Forest.
Another outstanding young man and a great basketball player. Coach Mack, you're sitting in the locker room. It's the state championship game. Tell us, because I never played. I've coached some state championship games. But as a player, what was going through your mind as you got ready to take the floor to go out and give Garinger an opportunity to put another state championship banner? And a lot of people don't realize this about Garinger, but Garinger's got a lot of state championships, and some great players came through there. Dwight Clark, the catch Dwight Clark of San Francisco 49ers was at Garinger. Charlie Chaton, who for years was considered one of the top athletes to ever come through Charlotte. Garinger High School, Grady Little, manager of the Boston Red Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and his younger brother Twig, Garinger High School, their brother Tommy Little, Brick Smith. I mean, just a ton of guys came through Garinger. And when you were getting ready to play for a state championship, you knew you had all those eyes on you. What was going through your mind in the locker room?
Not to let my brothers down. And I say that because my older brothers were my measuring stick. Both of them, they groomed me to be a basketball player. And I distinctly remember my middle brother coming in there, and he was an all-state football player at Garinger, and him telling me, now's your time. It's your chance. Go out there and do what we know you can do. Have fun. And to me, it's not really having my father in the house with me. That was my my fulfillment, just to make them happy, to see them run off and see that they were pleased with what I was doing. That's what I was focused on. Everything else to me was secondary. And that was one of the best games I ever had.
Well, you're a state champion. You're a man who has faced adversity. You're a man who is a great example to young people in this community and the entire region. I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. You've given a lot of your time. We're looking forward to having you back 2 weeks from tonight. We're going to have a special show. We anticipate that being a 90-minute show. But we're going to ask you and some judges and Coach Clark and myself, we're not going to be taking any calls that night. We're going to ask that young people all across the region listen to this and hear the voice of experience and know that some really good men are going to be giving you some advice and saying some things to you that we hope you listen to. Coach Walker, Coach Mack, thank you very much for being on this show tonight. Ricky, we're going to have to talk a little basketball. Alex, be welcome on this show anytime. Coach Mack, Brian, be welcome on this show. Thank you both for joining us. Ricky and I are going to fuss a little bit about the NCAA tournament. Thank you for joining us, fellas.
Before I let you hang up, is Alex still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Alex, I appreciate the kind words, and so you'll know, we know over at Martin that every time we play your team, that we're gonna struggle to score on offense, and that you guys will run the ball down our throat when you have the ball if we don't play good defense, if we don't follow our assignments. So you're right, it's always a good battle, and we enjoy it, and you know we enjoy playing, and you know we spent a lot of years, Coach Ledford and I, trying to make our kids understand if you had a choice to play a Ridge Road or you have a chance to play a team that haven't won a game, if you don't say you want to play Ridge Road, you can't play for us. You're not the type of athlete that we want on the field. And I appreciate the kind words, and everybody in the conference know that when you play Ridge Road, you better bring your A game. Do you gonna go home with the L? And I appreciate those words.
Well, Coach, I tell you something. Those are two great guests we had on tonight, and good men. I'm looking forward to having. I'm really looking forward to their show 2 weeks from tonight, because one of the things that you and I have absolutely tried to do is to be something of a role model for kids. And I know that there are times that I have failed in that regard. I know that there are times that I have let maybe a bad day at the courthouse, you know, or just frustration with, you know, getting as old as I am. And, you know, and every coach has gone through those moments. But, you know, one of the things that is important when we deal with children is recognizing just how important this is to their life. And, you know, all of us who have given so much of our time and energy towards that, you know, we want to encourage others to become more involved, but be positively involved. And tonight we've talked about some of the situations where people are involved in a negative way. And Ricky, what do you know? I mean, you're not just a coach, you're a teacher. You're a teacher first and last. Your supplement doesn't support your family. It's that teaching salary that you have. What do you say, what do you have to say to people who might be listening about not acting like a, and there's just another way to put it, but an unmitigated idiot at a youth athletic event?
Yeah, and, you know, Joe, what you try to make them understand is that it is easy to tear down. It's just easy to tear down. You know, it's hard to build up. You know, everybody can stand there and spit out negative words. You know, you can't tear a kid down every day and never build him back up, because one day you're going to look up and that kid is not going to get back up, you know. So, you know, I say to the parents, you know, when I have those situations, and we don't have as many of them as you would think we have. But I'm all over them. I'm all over them. If all you're going to do is tear down, you know, you want to do that to your child, get him home and do it. Don't do it in front of me. Don't do it in front of my coaching staff. And certainly don't do it in front of somebody else's kids. You don't have the right to tear down your kid in front of 44 other football players. You just don't.
You know, Coach, there was a time that I coached my oldest daughter, Megan, when she was playing softball. And I coached my youngest daughter, Ashlyn, for a little bit. And I realized there were times that it was time for me to quit coaching my own children. And that was true with Patrick as well. For the girls, it came a little bit earlier. But one of the things that I always try to remind, especially the dads, of their daughters. I'd pull them aside and, you know, I mean, girl athletes, they wear it a lot harder than men. You know, I mean, you know, there are a lot of people, and Pat Summitt will disagree with this, but there are a lot of people that say that if a man says something to a girl, she'll shut down, or if, you know, a woman says it to her, she's going to be more motivated. Pat Summitt doesn't share that philosophy, but far be it for me to disagree with one of the greatest basketball coaches ever. But I found that to be true. And one of the things that I would tell the fathers of these 13- and 14-year-old girls, I just ask them, what do you have in common with your 13-year-old daughter? For that matter, what do you want to have in common with a 13-year-old girl? And the answer to that is almost always very little. You know, I mean, there's certain family things that we all have in common, but for the most part, and this is not just true for you know, our female athletes, it's true for our male athletes as well. Sometimes the only thing that we have in common with them is their athletic participation. Why do we want to risk that? Why do we want to mess that up? And, Coach, you have seen parents ride kids like they're Missouri mules, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think that they realize how long that kid wear that. Because most of our athletes out there, they're out there trying to please their coaches first, their parents second, and then their classmates and schoolmates in the school. You know, I ride them enough for everybody involved. Nobody else need to say anything. They hear it from you and I, and you know, for you got three people you're trying to impress. Okay, you already didn't impress the coach because I'm all over you. Now dad's all over you. You know, on the middle school level, and if Alex is still listening, Alex will say that this is true. Middle schools can be cruel. They can be cruel in the hall the next day after a game. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind, that kid, even though that kid is your child, that kid is getting it from three different areas. So hopefully, coming from you, you can say that this is what you need to work on. This is what I observed. This is what I think you need to work on. Check with your coach tomorrow and see if they agree. You know, that's a better way to do it than just spewing out negative words.
Well, Ricky, I said we were going to talk some basketball, and it's time to talk a little basketball. We have about 17 minutes left. And last night, as we were getting to the end of the show, you know, and again, people are debating who's going to go to the Final Four, who's going to, you know, be the national champion, and people are giving their opinion. And yet, I want to go back to the subject that we were talking about last night, because I actually crunched some numbers today, and I'm referring to, you know, Draft Express, and they put together what they consider to be the 2013 mock NBA draft. And, Ricky, what I'm seeing, there are 60 players who are going to be drafted, okay, through the first two rounds of the NBA. And I was stunned that 10 of those, let me say that again, 10 of those projected first and second round draft choices are seniors. Only three seniors are projected to be first round draft choices, seven in the second round. And, you know, Coach, I'm going to go back through the list again because it's a little bit different. You know, Noel out of Kentucky, 18-year-old, 6'11", 216-pound freshman. Ben McLemore, shooting guard, 20 years old. Now, he's a 6'4 freshman. He is 20. Cody Zeller, a 20-year-old, 7-foot, 240-pound sophomore. And it just goes down the list. Four freshmen, five freshmen. Six is a junior. That's, you know, and, you know, he's a young man out of Indiana whose name, to be honest with you, the lighting, you get old, it's harder to see my own writing to read my old writing. But, yeah, I mean, you go down the list, seven freshmen, eight sophomore, nine international, but he's 20 years old, 10 sophomore, 11 sophomore, nine senior, you know, 12 senior, 13 junior, 14 freshman, 15 sophomore, 16 freshman, 17 senior, 18 freshman, 19 sophomore, 20 junior. And the names don't really matter because that's not the point. The point is not who it is. The point is
that, you know, the college game is being so affected by the NBA's refusal to adopt a junior year rule. And it's not just, and, you know, whether the college game is the same game or not is not the point. The point is, and it's going to go back to some of the things that, you know, we're going to talk about probably every night on this show. It's about choices and decisions. We as a society and our athletes in general have become so into and so interested in what's happening right now. And I think that one of the things as coaches and as teachers and as mentors and as leaders, we need to try to encourage young people to look down the road. Where are you going to be in 10 years? And I keep going back to that 30 for 30, where we see that so many professional athletes end up with nothing. They end up bankrupt or struggling to get by 6, 7, 8 years after their time playing ball is over. You know, I mean, and Coach, what's your message to young people as a guy who did stay for 4 years, as a guy who had that experience? You know, what is it that we as coaches can say to kids to get them thinking about what they're going to do for the rest of their life after the basketball quit bouncing or after they've thrown that last pitch?
Yeah, well, Coach, you know, I sat there and I was trying to make sense out of my bracket, and you know that I'm a Carolina guy when it comes to basketball, and so I went back and looked, and I was trying to figure out how did Roy Williams up at Carolina get in the position that they're in, where they're taking early exits out of the NCAA playoffs, and I started looking at just the kids that left, and you know, how can I build a college program if I can only look forward to having a kid 1 year? If that's the length of time that I'm going to have a marquee athlete, a starter, is 1 year, and they're going to go on to make to the NBA, and it's hard to build a program. And what as I start doing some research, I was blown away just looking at the starters that came out in the in the 2011-2012 and went into the NBA draft. And out of all these teams, Carolina, Texas, St. John's, Illinois, Weber State, Syracuse, Mississippi, Duke, Washington, Ohio State, Georgetown, Villanova, Iowa State, and Arkansas, Syracuse lost two, a center and a guard last year, decided to come out. Washington too, but Carolina lost three starters, underclassmen, not seniors, underclassmen, Harrison Barnes. They lost John Henson, a forward, and they lost Kendall Marshall, a guard. So when people say, you know, Coach Williams, they're going to be calling for his replacement. They're going to be calling for his replacement. What people should be calling for is for Commissioner David Stern to do something about it. And, you know, when we first started talking about it 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, Commissioner Stern came out and made a statement, and that statement said it is not the NBA's problem. So that is part of the problem right there. Nobody wants to accept the responsibility for these young athletes.
Let me jump in for a minute, because here's the counter to that. The counter to that is that in a free democratic Republican society, and we are a republic, people say we're a democracy, but in fact we're a republic, little civics there, a person should have the right to decide whether he goes or doesn't go, whether he stays in school. Now, I mean, there are a lot of kids that start college that don't finish because it's not right for them. And, you know, and that's the counter to that. And when you hear, you know, you hear people say, and I think that's entirely true, but Ricky, where I think people are missing the boat here, and maybe I'm wrong about this, and I appreciate the fact
that it's just as likely that I'm as wrong as I want to be right. But it's not just about that choice. It's about the statistics showing that there are a lot of young men who have an opportunity to get an education. And the statistics just do not support that it is a good decision in the long run, that they are not financially sound after 7-8 years. They are not able to support their families. They have not prepared themselves for adulthood, for parenthood, for, you know, you might be an athlete until you're 30, but if you live to your life expectancy, that means you've got about 47, 48 more years that you
exactly.
have to have something that you can fall back on, and it's not going to be basketball. It's not going to be football. And, Coach, I'll tell you what I think this really comes down to. I think that we as a society are looking for immediate gratification. We are not spending enough time evaluating what truly is important in life. And, you know, if you think about what you hear on these call-in shows, I was talking to a fellow the other day about the great teams and the great coaches, and they talk about the great quarterbacks. And, you know, a name that gets constantly left out of that group is a guy named Jim Kelly at Buffalo. Jim Kelly and the Buffalo Bills went to 4 Super Bowls, and yet a fellow said to me, I don't consider him a great quarterback because he didn't, you know, he didn't win the big one. He didn't win the big game. Well, how many big games do you have to win just to get to the Super Bowl? How many quarterbacks have been to 1 Super Bowl, let alone 4? And the fact that, you know, another team managed to, you know, I mean, the first, last, second play in the Super Bowl was when the Giants kicker, I can't remember the guy's name, hit the field goal that, you know, that put the Giants ahead with about a second or two, maybe even at the very end of the game, and the Bills had their heart broken that night. Coach Levy, the same way, took 4 teams to the Super Bowl. People say about him, well, he never won the big game. They used to say about Dean Smith, with all that talent, Dean, you know, only won the national championship twice. He only won the national championship twice? Are you serious? You only won it twice? How many coaches even play for it, let alone win it? We have gotten to a point in this society that there's only one measure of success, and that is that piece of hardware that says champion. There's more to sports than that. And, you know, Ricky, you've coached your shares of champions, but you've coached your shares of teams that did not win championships. You know, I mean, am I wrong on this? Is Joe just flat wrong about how I'm perceiving this?
No, we shouldn't place emphasis on winning, but a lot of these kids are swayed by the media and these professional athletes that, you know, out here driving the $300,000-$400,000 cars and living in the mansions and those type things. You're looking at a handful of professional athletes, and I wish I knew the exact number of professional athletes that play in the United States, and I should have looked that up. But at the same time, you don't see the number of failures. You know, today when I was researching some of the stuff that we were going to talk about tonight, I was blown away, and at just in order to find what I needed. You know, you run across articles about kids that didn't make it. And you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that kid. Oh, yeah, I forgot about this kid. I forgot about that basketball player. I forgot about that football player. I forgot about that baseball player. It's not just basketball. We happen to be talking about basketball because it's March Madness. But it's every sport across the board that allow kids to come out after 1 year of college or to come out of high school for that matter. But we just happen to be talking about basketball. The NFL right now, in my opinion, is closer to what needs to be done than any other professional sports organizations. And the NFL said you don't play ball for us until after your junior year. And I agree with that 100%. But I was blown away, and I'm hoping maybe on the next show we can do the opposite of that. We can go back and find some of the kids that everybody expected to be the next Kobe Bryant, the next LeBron James, the next Michael Jordan. Go back and find some of those kids and see if it ring a bell with them like it did with me today. It's like, oh, good, yes, I forgot about this kid or that kid. And, you know, as I was looking today, Joe, I thought, you know, there's another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 marquee athletes said that they were coming out this morning. You know, as we go deeper into the tournament and teams are eliminated, these kids are heading for the big money. And the success stories does not outweigh just the tragic of kids coming out, sitting in their cars, waiting for their name to be called. Once you make that commitment that you're going to enter your name into the draft, a lot of people don't understand. After the deadline, you can't put your name back in that college. You can't say, wait a minute, I'm going to go back and play for them. It don't work that way. Once you declare yourself eligible for the draft, you better hope they draft you because it's over. If they don't draft you, it is over.
We do need to talk about one success story, and it's a success story that came through James Martin Middle School. We were cleaning out a locker over the summer, and we found a plaque for a girls' basketball team most valuable player. And you know who I'm talking about. Who was that, Coach?
Maya Moore.
And who is that? Who is Maya Moore?
Female basketball sensation. Played for UConn, the Huskies.
And was a star on the Olympic team. And I'm sitting there looking at this plaque, and one of these days we're going to have to reach out to her and get that to her. Actually, we need to do that pretty soon. But you think about, you know, here's a young lady that, you know, came through, you know, James Martin Middle School, an Olympic champion, a national champion, a WNBA champion. And, you know, and you take a look at what she did and what she accomplished. And, you know, you look back with some pride and you say, I had a little bit to do with that. I have a former baseball player of mine who I had my hands on for a little while, counseled him a little bit, and he made that decision to go from high school to Major League Baseball, and he's we talked about that decision. I talked more with his parents than with him because that was more appropriate to do, and, you know, it's worked out for him. He's won 2 games in the World Series, the youngest pitcher ever, I think the only pitcher ever, to his first 2 World Series outings to be shut out, you know, pitch shut out for his innings, and I'm glad, I'm so glad for Madison Madison Bumgarner that it worked out. What concerned me about that, and what concerns me about some of these other people, you're exactly right, Coach Clark. For every success story, there are probably, and we're going to get the numbers because these are numbers that need to be talked about. These are numbers that need to be really discussed. And people do have the right to make those decisions, but they need for society not to glamorize just what can go right about that decision. And we don't want to be overly pessimistic, and we don't want to make it sound like we're trying to make choices for people, but we're not. What we are saying, that college experience is so important. Now, Coach, that college degree is so important. One of the things we have not done a real good job of is ending this show. So I will tell you right now, I'm looking at the board. We have about a minute and 13 seconds. That belongs to you. And then we're gonna sign off. I'd like to remind everybody that Player Sporting Goods at Charlotte, North Carolina, 5737 Graham Street, is a proud supporter of this program. And we want you to encourage you to take advantage of everything that they have to offer for you. Coach, you got about a little under a minute. What have you got to say to our listeners tonight? And I'll let you take us off the air.
Hope that during all the conversation that you walked away knowing that the people that were on work with your kids every year, and most of us have done it for over 15 to 20 years, and we always have your kids' best interests at heart. You know, make sure that your kids understand and realize that the education system in this country is the biggest factory in this country. This the economy is based on how much you learn. The more you learn, the more you earn. So when you make a decision to quit school, or you make a decision not to go to college, when you make it, or you make a decision to bring in a type of income that's illegal, for lack of a better word, you're talking about something that will be with you the rest of your life. I want to touch on what Coach Ledford said earlier. You know, even the best of athletes are done after 25, 30 years. Most of us, the average life expectancy is in the mid-70s. So you got another 40 years of your life to live broke. So, you know, make sure that you stress getting an education. You guys have a good night.